Empire of the Suns.
Suns.
Empire of the Suns.
Arizona Sports presents the Empire of the Suns podcast.
Empire of the Suns.
It's the Empire of the Suns podcast. I'm Kevin Zimmerman, joined by Kellen Olson. We are diving straight into free agency. The Suns have decisions to make. They need a point guard, probably. They need a power forward, probably. And that's pretty much where we're expecting them to set their focus for free agency.
That's what McDonough said. He said Friday, according to those who were there, that they want a point guard and they want to target a power forward who can shoot. And if they can defend, they would like that too.
That's asking for a lot.
Center is, yeah, and that's something I wrote about that I will be writing about on the site, is that when you look at stretch fours who can play defense in this league, there's like three guys. It's like guys who shoot league average from three and play good defense. Is this a campaign for why Dragan Bender should not be traded? Probably, but it's like Dario Saric, Al Horford, and that's it. And I'm not even sure you can say Dario Saric is like a good defender.
I would not say he's a great defender.
It's like, it's Al Horford then. Like, Al Horford is the only guy who shoots like league average or above from three and plays good defense. Like, it's only him. It's nuts. But so that those guys don't really exist. But there's also, Gambo mentioned this on the air on Monday, that if Alan Williams gets let go, which seems extremely likely just because of how much money he makes, it's like they go from, he is 33% of their cap space right now if they let him go. Like, they all of a sudden have like $10 million if they don't cut him, and it's like you don't really have wiggle room there at all.
I should preface this by saying we're just making the assumption that Alex Len and Elfrid Payton are not going to be re-signed and going to be rescinded, because that's pretty much a lot of the cap space is opening there when you consider those guys.
If they renounce those two guys, they let go of Tyler Ulis, they have about, I think it's like seven or eight. It's somewhere around there, because they still have to get rid of Williams, and then they have the guaranteed, non-guaranteed contracts of Reed and Harrison as well. I think Harrison, Ulis, I think the only guy that survives is Davon Reed.
That's just an interesting thing too, yeah.
If you want to fill two needs with how much space they don't have right now, unless they plan on trading Chandler Dudley or TJ Warren, like, if you plan on getting a legitimate player in this free agent class, it's going to take up almost all your space already. We are assuming. I think that's where we should start, is that there are very few teams with salary cap space right now. So someone like Zach LaVine trying to get the max is probably not going to happen.
No, thank you.
Shouts to Zach trying to get that paycheck, but I think you'll just take what you get there. But we just have no idea how cheap or how not cheap some of these deals are going to be. Is it going to fluctuate? Are there going to be some teams that are going to be able to get massive deals out of this, or really good prices? I think so. But I think guys are still going to get paid. Like, there are going to be at least like eight or nine guys that are below the tier that we're automatically not even talking about on this podcast, which is like the LeBron James, Paul George.
Yeah.
Kevin Durant's technically a free agent when he declines his option, but sounds like he's staying in Golden State. Nikola Jokic is technically a free agent. He could pull a Carlos Boozer and dip, but it sounds like he's getting the max. So we don't know how much these guys are going to cost, but we assume the guys we're going to talk about, someone like Jabari Parker, Aaron Gordon, Marcus Smart, Avery Bradley, Thad Young, Derek Favors, Trevor Ariza, that guy's going to cost you at least eight figures. And that is going to take up most of the Suns' cap space, which is what's so interesting in how they go about this, because the market is going to dictate a lot of what they can do. Because if they can bring in two of those guys, that's a pretty good haul for their free agency, but they can't really do that.
So just to reset and take you back, two summers ago was when the cap really just started jumping. Teams overspent on guys like Solomon Hill, who I'll bring up every time I can. And Ryan McDonough's right in that the Suns had a really tough time just being like, all right, we're not going to spend this summer or the next. They didn't. And now there's a reason that some people do look at the Suns and say, okay, you have a great young core that will help you sign players, but more than that, you just have space and the ability to spend without doing a whole lot, like renouncing guys and not picking up these non-guaranteed deals. Now, what that does is, like, when you had an ESPN panel today of five writers, two of them picked the Suns as dark horses in free agency just because of that fact. Like, the Suns have a core that looks all right, but they're not many teams are in their position, basically.
Well, to take it back to your point, too, I think hindsight, they don't want 4 years on that Tyson Chandler contract. They want three. And same thing with Jerry Dudley. They wanted a year less. So they did shoot themselves in the foot a little bit because they should have, if they played this right, they should have $30, $40 million in cap space right now. Because when they wanted to be aggressive was 2019, and McDonough said their timeline got pushed up a year. So they want to be aggressive this year, which is what we've talked about for 6 months now. But they can't really be extremely aggressive because of those two guys and the Brandon Knight contract as well, which has less to do. I think it's just more Chandler Dudley having that extra year is what's handicapping them a bit right now. Because the TJ Warren, he was going to get an extension. Brandon Knight was going to always sign that deal when they traded for him. Like, that's just the way it goes sometimes.
Yeah.
But looking at these names, is there anything else you want to set up before we talk about individual names? Because nope. I think it's a fairly competitive, like, space. It's not like they're going to be bidding against themselves and the Celtics for Marcus Smart or someone like Fred VanVleet. It's like there are plenty of teams that need space. Like, Indiana, to me, is, I think, the team that no one is talking about. They have a lot of space if Thad Young declines his option. And you talk about, like, Victor Oladipo as a guy, I think, and a team that just won that many games that almost eliminated the Cavs from playoff contention. They're a very interesting team that could take some of these names, that could look to be targeting similar names. So how we're going to group this is we're going to start with guys who we believe it's impossible. Again, like, we're hearing reported price tags of guys and everything, but that's always a bad way to go because it might be agents driving up prices. It might be teams driving down prices. We have no idea. But our best guess, these are guys who are going to cost you at least like $9 to $10 million. And if the Suns have anywhere between $12 to $17 million in cap space, their max is 17.5 if they get rid of every single non-guaranteed contract. But that includes Davon Reed, who I don't think they're going to let go. Shaquille Harrison's also in that group as well. They could want to keep him. It gets pretty tough, and now you're down to like $14 million in cap space. If they want to keep Alan Williams, now you're at that group. So the group of guys we're looking at, Aaron Gordon is a guy we're going to mention right now, but they would have to open up more space because he looks like a guy who's a max guy right now. He seems like one of the few.
Let's start with him. I think that signing, it's the writing's on the wall with Chris and Bender, I think, so just dealing them might be what you have to do because I don't know how tradable Jared Dudley and Tyson are as far as you're not going to get much back. You open up a lot more cap space, but that's just, to me, hard to do unless those guys have a like fit. Like, is there a team where they're boys with someone and they would just add to a locker room type situation? That's basically, you're paying them that many figures for that. So Aaron Gordon, you might just have to trade Chris and Bender somehow, some way. I mean, those salaries would open up close to enough room, I believe, if I'm just doing it off the top of my head.
Maybe you trade someone like Okobo, or maybe you trade a future pick with Chandler Dudley.
They can't even trade Okobo, right? I actually don't know second round rules as far as signing, but moving on beyond
that. You're right, because they've already signed him. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, so I don't know, but as far as Gordon fit, it's dude's a great defender. He was kind of miscast in Orlando. Is he a lot better playing alongside someone with Devin Booker? Maybe.
I'll have a thing up on him. It's really interesting looking at his just breakdown of his shots and just watching him more. Because there is optimism there. I think there are Suns fans who, if like we would have had like a month, like, you know how long we had to wait for the draft, it felt like, if we would have had that amount of time for like free agency, I think people would have really began to talk themselves into Aaron Gordon because of the situation that he was in. the bottom line here is that you have now, with what you've done on draft night, like, this is no Zaire Smith, Lonnie Walker situation where you're kind of, it's a raw, unproven guard you're kind of waiting on at 16. You have Mikal Bridges now who's ready to go. That changes everything, which a lot of people aren't getting this, that that's a huge deal. You go from a core three of Ayton, Booker, Jackson, and whatever you get, the whatever you get out of group includes Chris Bender, whoever you take at 16, Okobo, and so on. Mikal Bridges is not in that group anymore. He is in the big four of the team.
Slide aside, I think the people who hated that trade don't think he's going to be more than Davon Reed. And, like, this is, like, peak Davon Reed. But yeah. Still, it's like, I think personally that Mikal Bridges could be, like, more than just a role player. I think he could be, like, the third best player on the team if you're looking really positively. But, okay, we'll get back on the topic.
But it does change things because now you go from that three and you're looking like, wow, if we add Aaron Gordon to this group of three, it's a group of four now.
Yeah.
So do you really need Aaron Gordon? Like, yes, you have an opening at power forward. Even if Mikal Bridges is a quote-unquote four, he's not going to spend most of his time playing there, I would think. It sounds like they want him to play some there, but he could rotate with another power forward to get some time in. If you sign Aaron Gordon for $20 million a year or more, or just above 15, this is Brandon Knight all over again. You are placing a huge risk down, but the difference is you were okay with taking that risk before with Brandon Knight because it was you kind of needed to. There was something that needed to be added to the team, and that was the guy that they settled on. With Gordon, you don't have to. There is no real reason to go get him because, look, he's 22. Like, Devin Booker is a better player than Aaron Gordon. You are not bringing in someone who is going to radically change this team right now. Is he going to help this team get better? Yes. Is he the best guy they could target in terms of that goal, in terms of improving their wins? I don't think so. And that's where I hesitate, is that the absolute best case scenario does help. It's Aaron Gordon is a guy who can actually shoot. The most interesting number on him is that he shot 39% on catch and shoot threes last year. He shot, I believe, 21% on pull-up threes, and he took about 1.5 pull-up threes a game, 4 catch and shoot threes a game. So if you just take out pull-up threes because it's like, you're Aaron Gordon, why are you taking pull-up threes? And you go back to catch and shoot, maybe he is a guy who can shoot 34-35% from three. Add in the part where you're like, he's a great defender, which is true. He's proven he's a great rebounder in this league. Now you've really got something. You've basically got the super version of what you hope Dragan Bender can be, or yeah, maybe what you drafted Dragan Bender to do, essentially. That is worth the money. Is that who Aaron Gordon is? I have no idea, and no one knows.
So I think he's a lot closer than that. Like, I think when you talk about other top free agent options that are reasonable, they're going to be at point guard and they're going to cost less. So it's like, do I want to spend 20 on a power forward who can guard twos even on a switch? Like, that's where, like, we talk about value in today's NBA, which is the buzzwords. Like, he can switch pretty much everything. And so defensively, I think he has a great upside. And he's also a pretty good passer for a power forward. The shot, at least when he's set, he's fine. He's all right.
I just used 22 being a negative. It's a positive in this end because he's a guy that can grow into a lot of different areas.
So if you have any more on him, you can spew it in a sec. But, like, I think judging him next to, like, say, an Avery Bradley, where you know you're getting solid defense, he's a role player, but he's already topped out, but he's going to cost half the price, then that's where you're kind of juggling these decisions for the Suns.
Well, that's also because with Gordon, you're signing him to a four-year deal.
Yeah, that's true.
You are... If you sign Avery Bradley or Thad Young or Derek Favors or whatever, maybe it's only to a two-year deal, one-year deal, three-year deal. Look, these players might be looking at it the same way, where they're like, we know we're not going to get paid what we think we should get paid, so we're just going to take a one-and-one. We'll just take a player option for next year, and then we'll see how the 2019 market looks or the 2020 market looks when the cap is going to go up. It's expected to go up $5 to $6 million next year, and there's expected to be a bump after that as well. So those players will be... Aaron Gore's not looking at it that way, though.
I don't think he should, no.
And he shouldn't either. So the question the Suns have to ask themselves, is Gordon that good of a fit to where you're done? Like, this is Booker's about to be making almost $30 million a year. Even if you move TJ Warren, Brandon Knight, Chandler Dudley, like all those contracts, sure, that's $40 to $50 million. $30 million of that is going to Devin Booker, and that's completely fine. I'm 100% on board with that. But now you have to start thinking, okay, like Josh Jackson's deal is coming up, like Bender and Chris, do we want to keep them? How much are they going to cost if we want to keep them? And you still have to spend money in other areas. And then
that's where this young core complicates things, but it's down the road, I guess.
Yeah, so I am on board with going after Gordon if they just 100% believe that he can be that guy. But if he is more of a, not is, but is just more of a good stats, bad team kind of guy that we're willing to admit, he's an inefficient scorer who doesn't maximize his value in the right ways because he's trying to be a 25-point-per-game scorer when he should just be super-duper role-player guy. He should be the third option on a team offensively every time he's out there, not the first. And that's where I get conflicted with him. But there's certainly upside. Like, if he comes in and, like, your side of the case, my side of the case, if he comes in and does your side of the case, the Suns are arguably a 40-win team next year.
Yeah.
Which is where it's going to be tough. And it's like, if that possibility's out there and you're Ryan McDonough and you're not going to be here in 3 years if you don't win anyway, that might be the guy to go after.
Also, we didn't mention he's a restricted free agent, which...
Yep, and Orlando, it sounds like
Orlando would like to keep him, which they probably should. They don't have very much talent. So, in that respect, it's tough because the Suns, especially after all these promises, can't afford to try to go big and then just strike out on him. And also, in the meantime, when your money's locked up before the Magic are like, all right, we're going to match you, then you miss out on other potential guys who have time to bide and meet with other teams, talk with other teams, and then decide the Suns are making me second to Aaron Gordon, who they're not going to get. So that's where it's complex.
Jabari Parker, no. Go ahead.
I don't see. Yeah. Well, we were going to talk about Jabari Parker, but I'm a lot higher on Aaron Gordon, especially with Jabari's injury history.
So I was just going to say him, Gordon, and Smart are kind of in this group where they're young, up and coming players who are looking to come on to a new team and find a new role. And they are going to be very, very likely going to be 3 to 4 year deals where you're going to be paying them at least like $13, $14, $15 million a year. I have no interest in Jabari Parker. He does not play defense. No.
What if the market, I don't know how bad the market could be. What if the market's so bad and what if he's like, you have a 2 year deal with him or something and you just pay him like $18 a year? With like half guaranteed, or I don't know, the second year.
If we strike out, if the Suns strike out on everyone and it's July 16th and he's sitting there and it's like he can't get a deal, and you give him like a 2 year deal with a third year team option and you pay him like $15 million a year, I guess, but I would still rather just keep the flexibility and just play.
Do it next summer?
Yeah, and just sign someone else like. Just sign a more veteran-y power forward like Ersan Ilyasova for a 2 year, $18 million deal instead.
Yeah.
And not completely handcuff yourself with that extra $6 or $7 million you'd be spending on Jabari. Jabari's a really good scorer. He's a good shooter. He has complete question marks about his injury history, though, and he doesn't play defense.
Yeah.
You're staring at that Bucks team, and you watch Giannis and Chris Middleton try and drag an entire roster with themselves. And you're like, where is the help? And then you see Eric Bledsoe, and you're like, oh, you're supposed to be the guy. And then you see Jabari, and you're like, you were supposed to be the guy before he was supposed to be the guy. But both of you are not the guys.
Yeah.
And then you see Tony Snell, like, barely playing, and you're like, oh, you were supposed to be the guy after they were, because you're making like $12 million a year.
Malcolm Brogdon's the guy, basically.
Matthew Dellavedova was over there making $8 million a year just sitting there. Yeah. Same thing with John Henson. It's like that whole situation. It's like, how did Jabari not stand out there? It's because he's not very good.
Wow, harsh. I can't really disagree with you. Okay.
I'm sorry, I want to be wrong. I really like Jabari Parker's like skill set and watching him play when he was like at Duke and the beginning of
his
career.
That was like the last time we watched him play.
The beginning of his career, and like when he came back from his knee injuries, his first one, it was like, yeah, this is Jabari, and it just hasn't happened.
You wrote about Marcus Smart. To me, he's more risk than Aaron Gordon as a prospect, because I remember watching him every season he was at Oklahoma State, and it's like, he has a three-point shot this year. He didn't. And that's the exact same player I watch with Boston. Now, there are a lot of good things that come with him. He's like a dude you want on your side. You wrote about just making the right plays defensively, hustle. He's a pretty darn good defender who's like a really unique body type where he can defend lots of different positions from the point guard spot. And he can also kind of run point guard. He's not bad. But there are also like silly things that are just like, oh, Marcus Smart, you just airballed a three.
And how much is that? How much does that matter in an ecosystem of a 30 to 40 win team than it does on like a 50 to 60 win team?
Yeah.
Does that matter a lot more on a worse team? It probably does. The one part of that article that I just didn't really have time to get through, and there's really no way to write it without writing one sentence, is like, are we sure this isn't the last Brad Stevens case, like the latest one where it's this guy clearly has his flaws, but Brad Stevens makes him look very valuable. The historic like shooting inefficiency. Terry Rozier is like right next to him on that list.
Really?
That's the funny thing. Like Terry Rozier is a career, I believe, like 38% shooter, and he makes those guys work. He got that team to the Eastern Conference Finals with that guard rotation. I'm very skeptical of going after him, but it's the type of guy that if you sign him, it's like, is anyone else in this price range going to help you win more than he does? It's the answer is no. He is defensively, he is one of the most useful players in the NBA.
Yeah.
It's when you really look at players across the league and how useful they are, the guy can switch on to fours and it's not a mismatch. It's not a mismatch. It's like he's not got the edge, but he's going to hold his own and then some.
Yeah.
And then obviously he can switch on like threes and four. Like
he's like a mini PJ Tucker on defense. It's kind of.
He's a really good version of what PJ Tucker's value is, essentially.
Yeah.
PJ Tucker is a poor man's Marcus Smart. I think of it that way. Because Marcus Smart's out there guarding ones and twos, too. PJ's not doing that.
Right.
So I really like that. I watched a lot of Celtics the past couple of years. It is annoying how much he does like the winning play thing. It happens all the time. It is not a narrative or a trope. It is something that happens all the time. He always does it 2 to 3 times a game. He's diving and saving a ball.
He did Oklahoma State too, yeah.
He does it everywhere. And I really liked him out of the draft. I really like him in Boston. Do I like him in Phoenix enough to pay him enough for Boston not to match? It depends on what Boston's doing. Is Boston going after Kawhi? Are they going to be in one of those situations where they can be handicapped and you can get Marcus Smart for... There's a big difference to me to paying him $9 to $11 million a year than there is paying him $13 to $16. And I think $13 to $16 is what you need to pay to get him.
Yeah.
And $9 to $11 is where it's like, yes, you are going to come off the bench. You don't want him starting games. Like that's not how it works.
That's where it's interesting when you look at him versus Avery Bradley, who's, what, like 4 or 5 years older and also came out of Boston. And we've seen, well, we didn't see a lot, but we saw 46 games of what he looks like outside of Brad Stevens' system. And he looked pretty good. He looked like the same player, but he was shut down in March after he was traded in the Blake Griffin deal to the Clippers and had some weird core injury, which I couldn't read to you even if I had it in front of me. And so to me, that's most intriguing to me because it might make him a reasonable get, a guy who people kind of cooled on. Like if he had ended his career in Boston, or not ended his career, ended his contract in Boston, I think he would have had a lot higher value even if he had gotten hurt. But since he was traded twice, that just for whatever reason, I don't know, has taken any wind out of his sails when we talk about it in the media, maybe. But dude can still play, assuming he gets back from that injury, and he kind of brings the same stuff with a jump shot that's a little more reliable than Marcus Smart at a lesser price and probably won't need to be signed for 4 years.
Okay, so Marcus Smart on, like, let's say, like 13 to 16, 12 to 14 is like the rumored price, but it's probably going to be a bit higher than that. Would you rather have him on that deal, or would you rather have Aaron Gordon on 20-plus million a year, and you have to open up that space by getting rid of an asset to trade Dudley as well?
So we're voting on Smart versus Gordon.
Smart versus Gordon, like the outcome. Smart. Which outcome would you enjoy more?
Oh, I would enjoy watching Aaron Gordon more. For the team, it would be worse, though.
I guess enjoy is a wrong way of putting it. Yeah, like which one do you think is better? A better signing?
A smarter move would be smart. I don't know. I think
I'm right on the fence.
Yeah, that's really hard, actually. Because I think a lot higher upside, a lot more like class B star potential.
We're not super crazy about either, which is where I think the divide lands. Is like, I don't think, I'm not super crazy about signing Marcus Smart. I'm not super crazy about signing Aaron Gordon. I would lean Smart just because it wouldn't completely handicap you going forward in terms of free agency if you wanted to make moves and everything.
Yeah.
And I just think it's far more clear to tell what he is going to do on the court for what they want. And Aaron Gordon is more of like an upside grab, which is just a weird thing to do in free agency overall.
With that much money for such a young guy.
It's, you're just betting on the Orlando Magic being a dumpster fire. But then again, he did not have ball handlers play with him. This is what I'll have in a piece about him. He didn't have people handling the ball. He was handling the ball.
You know how people do comps? I wish there was, and front offices probably have this, where you can have like comps to what a $20 million contract does to you, like as far as handcuffing you in the future, so you can visualize it better. Because like obviously we're like, Brandon Knight's making 15 and we whine about it, and even if he was a little better and actually played, that's still a lot of money in our minds. So like over 20 is ridiculous for a guy who like is still, you don't know what he's going to be, but I just can't visualize if that's that ridiculous for that guy, because I think Aaron Gordon's still a really, really valuable piece. It's just like, is he a 2nd or 3rd or 4th best player on a team?
Yeah, if we're talking about the same price, it's not close. It's like, I'd rather have Aaron Gordon.
Yeah.
But that's not how it works. Let's kind of quickly go through the group of, these are guys who are just role players. That's what they are. I think Marcus Smart and Aaron Gordon are both like super role players. But these are guys where they are, they've been around the league a while. You are not bringing them in to be the 2nd, 3rd best player on this team. You are looking for them to be basically what you signed Jared Dudley and Tyson Chandler for, except you want them to obviously be far better than those two guys were when they were playing. So this is Trevor Ariza, Derek Favors. Do we include Rondo in here, or do we think he's going to not make as much money? Because playoff Rondo was happening. Like he made himself
he's
some
gonna
money.
He's going to ask for close to... He could make 10.
Ariza's a guy to me, that though, much. That's like, that costs like
I
at least 12, 13.
Ariza, yeah. Would you do Ariza and just he could be your starter at 10 for like 2 years?
Oh, yeah. 10, like 220? 100%.
Okay.
I just think he's going to be more expensive and he's going to want a long-term deal.
Yeah.
So if he wants like 342, I'm like, eh. 14 a year for the next three.
That's
probably more realistic kind of, eh. But all these guys I think are in the department. Thad Young's in here too. These are guys where if you can get them on a 220 deal or even like a 224 deal, 228, like $10 to $14 million a year over 2 years, that's kind of exactly what you want to get here.
Yeah.
I mean, even preferably it's a one-on-one with a team option for the next year so you can keep your flexibility open. But this is like we're kind of like
twisting
fan service-y a little bit. Like we're not really.
Trevor Ariza can get paid, I think.
Yeah. Derek Favors should get paid too. He's good at what he does, but I just don't get him next to DeAndre Ayton. I don't really understand.
Yeah. Before, when we were all on the Igor's running the front office train, it was draft Luka, sign Derek Favors. That made a lot more sense. But you take Ayton and it's like, eh, not so much anymore. especially on defense. Although I don't think he's super terrible. Like, he's played plenty of four.
But so. He's like, I looked at his shot charts, and it's like he's around the rim. That's
yeah.
Your spacing is going to die if you
it's gonna
put
get
him
a
four. And that doesn't seem like what they wanted to do.
DeAndre meant Dusan 8-2.0.
I like Thad Young. Thad Young is a Marcus Smart light, where he is just going to play really good defense, make a lot of winning plays here and there. He's not going to be much offensively, but I was incredibly impressed by him in the playoffs against the Cavs. He made Kevin Love's life absolutely miserable. And he is the type of four that can be... He is, to me, I think out of all these guys, he is the most realistic. But here's the thing. He is a $13.8 million player option, and if he declines that, that means he is looking to get paid. So it's like, do you want to sign him for 2 years, $30 million? Like,
also, I realistically don't know if that would be a smart move by him, because I don't know if he could even get that contract back.
Yeah.
Well, in 2 years he could, definitely, but it's like, why don't you just make that in one and then figure it out next summer when teams have more to spend?
I think that this group, the most interesting dilemma is, how much do you value 2019 flexibility? Are you going to sign anyone in this group, below this group, like below the Marcus Smart, Aaron Gordon group? Are you going to sign any of these guys to longer than a one-year deal in terms of over 1 year guaranteed? Are you going to give these guys? I think Trevor Ariza is probably above that. I think he's a guy that you'd be happy giving 2 to 3 years to. But if you sign Trevor Ariza to like a three-year deal, I understand you have Chandler Dudley. Daniel's expiring, so technically you have like the money to make a run at a guy in 2019 still. But with Booker's extension is the big thing, because he goes from making whatever it is, $4 to $5 million this year, to 30. Like, it's a $25 million bump that comes out of nowhere. And that's the difficult thing to be able to facilitate, really. And I think TJ Warren is the guy that I keep coming back to. We're at $12 million a year. This is why we have spent so much time talking about, like, him on $12 million just doesn't make sense for this team, because this is where you look at that $12 million, and if you could just trade him for an expiring deal and an asset, or just get rid of him like he's dead weight on a contract and just get rid of him for an expiring, that's where you can get some 2019 space potentially. The math is going to take a bit to solve here, but is there anyone there you like long-term?
Not long-term. I mean,
I like Fred VanVleet long-term.
I'm on the Avery Bradley signed to 2 to 3 years. I'm fine with that.
He's in that group too, yeah.
Because I really don't think that he's going to garner, like, everyone's going to be focused on Marcus Smart, basically. That's why I just keep getting stuck on his name and being like, he's everything. He fills the shooting, the defense, as we talk about every player that the Suns would want. Veteran guy, will not take a whole lot away, but also can take primary ball handling duties off. And you would hope Kokoschkov can run an offense where he's just running offense instead of playmaking. So to me, he's a guy who makes sense. He's also not super old. He's been there. He's won. All that stuff looks good to me. But if I think to back to your point about 2018 versus 2019, like, if McDonough's gonna talk about like what his building process is in his own timeline as far as job security, then he can just go overspend next summer, I think. And you have Booker, and then you hope that that's starting to win.
Yeah. Once Booker signs his extension and we know who the guys are they signed this year, it's going to be much easier to tell how big of a deal this actually is, having space in 2019. And maybe they don't need the space in 2019, but it sure seems like that's the year that they should want to be aggressive in free agency, because if the team trends upward and you're winning 34 to 35 games, maybe there is an outside possibility you can talk one of those less, like, top of the line, like, not Kawhi, obviously, but someone a tier below him. Paul Millsap's in there. Like, Ricky Rubio is in there. I know those aren't names that jump off the page for some, but this is the Phoenix Suns we're talking about. I love Fred VanVleet. He can shoot. He can defend. The only thing going against him is NBA experience, but, yeah, he can shoot. He can defend. He can run your team. and I would pay him. I would pay him. He's my favorite free agent target for the Suns.
Also restricted on a team that probably can't do a lot. So that's when you're bidding against someone that might be intriguing.
They're either gonna have to choose one of Wright or VanVleet, basically. Like, maybe they trade DeLon Wright for a pick or
unless
something.
They can somehow dump Lowry, if they would ever want to do that.
It seems like they're the one team that no one's talking about right now, where it feels like there's going to be a lot of moves there.
Yeah,
and some sort of reset is going to happen to some extent. Speaking of trades, is there anyone, after scrummaging through all the free agents, that you kind of look at as trade targets?
We've talked Beverly. Interesting thing with him, the Clippers did draft Shea, and you said Milos Teodosic opted into his contract.
Yep.
And they have Lou Will. So,
and they have Shea Gilgeous-Alexander and Austin Rivers.
Wow, why did I forget the coach's son? So that could be a situation where for some reason they're trading probably the best point guard when they have four.
Yet for me, from the Clippers, it's like, why would you trade Patrick Beverley? He's good. Your team is good. Keep the good guy. I know he's on an expiring, and maybe you're looking to pick up an asset, and that's another one where I'm looking at the Suns and saying, we just have to know what they're thinking. We just have to know what the Clippers are thinking. It's like, are you guys going to re-up Tobias? Are you guys going to re-up like DeAndre Jordan and most of this group and look at it like, yeah, we're fine with winning like 40 games for like the next couple of years. That's perfectly fine with us, like 40 to 45. So that's where you look at Patrick Beverley and you're like, well, what can you actually get for him in an expiring? Like, if the Suns are offering like the Milwaukee pick and Marquise Chris, like, are you going to say yes to that? Does that even matter for you guys? DeLon Wright is a name that just came up earlier. I like DeLon Wright. He's the same thing. It's like he shoots threes. He plays defense. Not a guy who's going to average 8 to 10 assists a game by any means, but that does not really matter when you play next to Devin Booker. There's nothing at power forward. There's nothing. There's Kevin Love, and there's nothing. We haven't talked about Julius Randle as a restricted target yet because, like, he doesn't shoot or play defense, and that's what they mentioned. Like, he plays defense when he tries really hard, and that's the thing, is like, he doesn't try really hard all the time, and that's what has really hurt his NBA stock and what is probably going to cost him money, is that, yes, we know what you look like when you try hard, but you've consistently proven throughout your career in LA that you just don't try hard all the time.
He alienated himself with his head coach pretty quick there. So, yep. And that's the other thing. It's just the options are not super intriguing. But things come out of the woodwork that you don't expect.
Yeah, Kevin Love, I guess, is the main name to keep an eye on there at power forward. But it's like LeBron would have to leave, and then they would have to decide they want to blow it up. And it's like, how much can you blow it up with all that money? And it's like, what are the Suns giving them in a blow-up situation that they would want? And how much are you willing to give up for Kevin Love, who's probably going to leave in 2 years? It's... Kemba's another name we didn't bring up because we've talked about him extensively. It seems more like a trade to me is more likely, just looking at the way the market is shaping
up. Sign and trades also, when you talk about guys like, if you're even going up to Aaron Gordon, that's, you never know. But yeah, I think there's going to have to be more engineering than just, hey, here's a cool presentation. Thanks for coming to Phoenix. It's really nice here. Scottsdale's really close. So that's how I'm viewing it, too.
Let's get out of here on the three non-guarantee guys left. We just assumed Tyler Ulis is gone. I mean, Elie Okobo getting drafted and then signed immediately is kind of the writing is on the wall there. Unless they don't get another point guard, which seems extremely unlikely. They just watched what Brandon Knight looked like 2 years ago. Like, are they willing to bet everything on him being good? Doesn't seem like the move for them. So that leaves us Alan Williams, Davon Reed, and Shaquille Harrison.
Chris and Bender being squeezed to probably more center minutes makes me think Williams is also a no. When's his date?
It is July 6th, I believe.
Yeah, so I think that actually is like...
That's enough time.
That's enough time for them to know whether they can pick it up, because it's like, you'll know if you're going to pay a guy more than $15 million, I think.
Yeah, like if you can get Marcus Smart to agree to like $12 million a year, like, all right, see us all.
I'm gonna push making a call on that.
Yeah, like the dream Trevor Ariza, we mentioned, like 2 year deal, you get him for $12 to $14 million a year, that's the same thing where it's like, all right, later, dude.
Yeah, and then I think that's what's interesting about Ulis and even like Harrison and Davon Reed. Like, you could just, if you want to keep them around and eat their salaries and see if they can compete in camp, and if like someone has a bad injury, then you've still got them, maybe. But this is a resetting season, a new coach, so it seems like they're going to be that aggressive still, even if aggressive is, you know, signing a Avery Bradley or Fred VanVleet.
Harrison's guarantee date is super far away too, so yeah, they can keep him around and then just let go of him to get back up or whatever. Davon Reed, I think, stays. It's, you just drafted him at 32. Unless you think that, unless the medicals have just, something didn't go wrong, but like if after his knee surgery, it just looks like he's a completely different player and he's not the guy that you guys drafted, then I guess you let him go. And if they let him go, that's what that tells me, is that they think that the knee surgery really took something out of him as an athlete, but I don't think that's the case. I don't
probably
think
not. Huge... Science is great nowadays.
Yeah, great medical staff at Phoenix, haven't you heard?
Yeah, I have. Thanks for listening, everyone. We'll put together another podcast. It might not be until after Sunday hits, which there will probably be things to talk about.